You're listening to the FQXI podcast. In our next interview, we hear from Ivan Oransky of Retraction Watch, which tracks and publicises retractions from journals with the aim of increasing integrity and transparency in the publishing process. Oransky is also involved with Archive, the physics preprint server, and one of a growing number of repositories where academics post their papers prior to peer review, so before they've been checked over by other experts in the field. So Oransky is ideally placed to discuss both the value and the problems with peer review today. Reporter Colin Stewart spoke to Oransky about his science and his journalism experience and how that has moulded his views.
Through his work with Retraction Watch, an organisation he co-founded, Ivan Oransky is shining a light on the murky world of papers that get pulled even after they've been peer-reviewed and published. As a journalist, he has strong views on the flaws of the current way that science is published too, but he didn't start out in journalism. I started our interview by asking him about the meandering path that led him there.
I grew up in a family of doctors. So you sort of went to medical school unless you didn't like the sight of blood, unless in case you went to law school. You didn't necessarily become a journalist. I did end up going to medical school, but along the way, I got very involved in the faculty beat at my college newspaper. I was immersed in tenure decisions and protests, frankly, and academic issues that are very much central to work that I do at Retraction Watch now. I used to sit in on peer review meetings. I learned a lot about how peer review worked and sometimes how it didn't work. So all of this was tilling the soil and planting seeds that I didn't even know I was going to end up doing anything with. So I left medicine to be a journalist full time. And then around 2008, 2009, Adam Marcus broke a big story about someone named Scott Rubin, who had made up all the patients in his clinical trials. Rubin ended up eventually going to federal prison for charges related to that misconduct. Adam did such a great job with the story, which I had never heard of until Adam broke it. It just got me thinking that there were all these great stories hiding in plain sight. And so I said to Adam one day, you know, and we've been talking about these issues, talking about different retractions. Rubin ended up having 25 retractions by the end of it. I said, what if we wrote regularly about this? What if we started a blog? And he said, sure, why not? And we did that, really not knowing what we were getting into. I mean, we knew the general contours of the stories. We understood some sources. We understood the landscape a bit. But we vastly underestimated how many retractions there were. And of course, that number has continued to climb ever since. So we're glad we did it. It's become really our life's work in many ways. But, you know, would we have done it had we known how much work it would be? I like to think we would have. In fact, maybe that would have made us even more likely to do it. But at the same time, we honestly did not know just the scale and the scope of the story at the time.
What is it exactly that Retraction Watch does?
So when we launched Retraction Watch in 2010, Adam and I had really two goals. One was to tell stories that weren't being told. We thought that there were really interesting stories about scientific integrity, scientific misconduct, scientific publishing. And we noticed that there wasn't a lot of transparency about this process and that it wasn't working nearly as well as people would like us to think it does. Retractions themselves are very hard to find. When you go to a paper that's been retracted or you go to an index that collects papers and abstracts, you should find out if the paper's been retracted. And in fact, a lot of the time you wouldn't know that because of the way things really don't work. And so around 2014, we crystallized this idea and we've been keeping like spreadsheets of retractions because we couldn't keep up with them. And so we said, well, wait, actually, maybe the world needs an actual database of retractions. So we have the journalism side where we continue to report on these cases. We have the database side, which was acquired actually by Crossref in 2023, an acquisition that was terrific for many reasons. It gives us sustainability and it also makes the data open so anyone can use them. But we feel as though, you know, the journalism and the database together can provide a service to the scientific community and to the general public. And we feel as though that's been confirmed by the interest in what we do, the support for what we do. But we really do those two things.
What impact is Reaction Watch having?
The database means that we have a steady source of stories, a steady source of information and reliable information and statistics and all of that. The journalism generally informs the database in the sense that sometimes the journalism side finds out about retractions first and feeds into it. The journalism side can also prompt retraction. So when we are reporting on something and more people know this is a problem, sometimes that leads to action. A very concrete example of the way that this works is that someone did a study that found that when Retraction Watch, the blog, writes about a retraction, citations to that retracted paper after it's cited go down. And so that, I think, shows the power of doing both. In order to know about the retraction, you need to be in the database, and maybe you need some press coverage, maybe you need some publicity around it. I think that's how we look at our impact.
You've also been involved in the archive, a preprint server that publishes papers before they've been peer-reviewed. What was the thinking behind that, and what's your role there?
The idea was to get papers and findings and studies out to the community of people who could vet them and who could actually build on them much sooner than publishing necessarily would. At the Simons Foundation, which is where my day job is, running a publication called The Transmitter, I am involved in a gift that we provided to Cornell to not just support the archive, but to help them to modernize, do things like move to the cloud and, you know, build new functionality. And because here at the foundation, we think that the archive is a critical piece of scientific infrastructure, and that's why we're very happy to support it. So I serve as the program officer for that gift, as well as some other smaller projects here involving scientific publishing or, you know, open science and sort of issues like that.
What do you think of the current peer review system, and is it needed if we have preprint servers like Archive?
My experience at Retraction Watch tells me that the peer review system is basically broken. And by that, I don't mean that it doesn't have a purpose or that it's not adding value, but it's adding much less value than I think a lot of people would like us to think. And it's been corrupted by bad actors and by an incentive structure for publisher perish that rewards mass quantity over quality. There aren't enough resources to do it, even though peer reviewers are not paid, which is often surprising to people. But even just getting people to do it, the numbers of people, number of hours, I think that system is not just strained, but actually busted wide open in bad ways. One natural response to that would be, well, let's just publish less, let's do less science. I don't think that that's a good idea. And I don't think that that's really what the world needs. I think the world, frankly, needs more science. The world needs more knowledge and better understanding and getting closer to, you know, quote unquote, truth, right? I think the answer is actually to get more information out there and get more studies and findings and even conclusions out there, but be very honest about whether or not they're peer reviewed, which is where preprint servers come in. Preprint servers can make the entire process really reflect how science could and should work, as opposed to this only publishing really because you have to keep a job or a grant, and ending up pushing more through the system than the system can actually handle. And you're starting to see some of that, which is great, but there's a lot of work to be done.
That was Ivan Oransky speaking with Colin Stewart. This interview forms part of a meta-science series examining scientific publishing and how to improve the doing of science in general. Over the coming weeks, we'll be posting more opinions from scientists, journal editors, and from academics who research meta-science, including more from Oransky. Keep checking qspace.fqxi.org for updates. On QSpace, you'll also find the winning entries and all submissions to our last meta-science-themed essay contest that asked how science could be different. And if you want to hear news of the next essay competition, just be a little bit patient, watch this space, or subscribe to our newsletter at QSpace, because there may be news coming soon. That's all we have time for today. Thank you again to Sarah Imari Walker, Logan Chipkin, Ivan Oransky, and Colin Stewart. You can follow us on pretty much all the socials as either FQXI or FQXI Physics, and subscribe on your favourite podcatcher or on YouTube. Thank you for listening. I've been Zia Morali.